Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, one of the big political stories we followed, especially earlier in the year, was the huge fight over in Wisconsin over the collective bargaining laws proposed by Governor Walker and supported by the Republican majorities. They eventually passed after court challenges. The Democrats, bankrolled by the unions, tried to recall enough senators to reclaim the majority for the Democrats. Didn't happen, although they picked up a couple. Now, labor leaders in Wausau, Wisconsin, want to ban Republicans from marching in the Labor Day parade. So the mayor of Wausau, Jim Tipple, who is nonpartisan officially and claims no affiliation with either party, says if the unions are going to ban Republicans, then they have to foot the bill for the parade. And so I think that's a nice step on his part to let the unions know that they can't run everything. I guess the only caveat here is that in Wausau, the entire cost of a parade is about $2,000. For an organization that basically bankrolled a bunch of recall campaigns, that probably won't stop them from doing what they want to do.
My understanding was that at midnight, they'd issued a statement saying, okay, they'll let representatives of both parties march in the parade. It seems like when we do our good martinis and our bad martinis, Greg, that Nevada seems strangely disproportionate in its bad martinis. We can credit the Senate Majority Leader for that. And it seems like Wisconsin, very definitely the state that is generating the most good martinis for much of this year. Perhaps there's a little bit of a cheddar tinge to our vodka here. I think this is very illustrative of a phenomenon we're seeing in Wisconsin, but in other states as well. Not too long ago, Scott Walker went to speak at some school, and my understanding is that the union folks who are out there protesting just behaved abysmally and egregiously and embarrassingly in front of a bunch of kids, you know, and a bunch of teachers who were just going to see the governor speak to a bunch of students. We shouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think if you had to characterize everything we've seen in this debate is this enormous sense of entitlement. And now literally the unions say, well, we don't like you. You can't march in the parade. I didn't know that every person who marched in a Labor Day parade was beloved by everybody who watches that parade. I didn't know there was that standard. I don't know if you needed a certain approval rating before you could march in a parade. So I guess I've reached the point where I'm really pleasantly surprised when I see common sense, you know, break out and some local official telling unions, no, you can't have that, when they make a demand that's as petty and entitled as this one.
Yeah, it's because it's clear, you know, if you want workers, especially state workers, to actually contribute a bit to their retirement plans and their health care coverage, clearly you're against the working man. Never mind the fact that ever since those laws were in place, Wisconsin's rating among small business-friendly environments has skyrocketed. And as you and I have discussed in the past, and I think Dan Foster mentioned as well, already some of the dire predictions from the unions in Milwaukee and elsewhere have proven to be absolutely untrue. So
keep in mind, why would any big union care about the fate of small business?
That's true.
Their workforces are not unionized. As far as they're concerned, that's not their problem. They may not realize that an environment in which bit by bit small businesses are squished and driven out of state will ultimately hurt those union members. But, you know, they're not so big on connecting those dots that way.
Yeah, absolutely right. Earlier in the week, Jim and I talked about Al Gore and his contention that confronting those who are actually skeptical about his version of why the planet may be warming, man-made global warming, that you have to confront them like you confronted the folks who sympathized with Bull Connor in the 1960s. So clearly, Al Gore has gone off the reservation, but apparently others in the party are trying to trump him, because Indiana Democratic Congressman Andre Carson, who's a prominent member of the Congressional Black Caucus, was at an event for the CBC in Miami and said, quote, some in Congress would love to see us as second-class citizens, and some of them in Congress right now of this Tea Party movement would love to see you and me hanging on a tree. I don't even know how to begin to address that. I think this is one of those situations, Jim, where you don't cast the pearls before swine, because he's so far off the reservation, nothing based on reality here. And even this article from Politico, which reports the story, suggests that, you know, this is similar to statements that South Carolina Congressman Joe Wilson yelled, you lie, at the health care speech, or Randy Neugebauer yelled baby killer at Bart Stupak at the very end of the health care debate. Those may have been out of line, but they were at least referring to specific legislation. There has been no Tea Party member, I promise you, either promoting or specifically introducing any idea or legislation suggesting that anybody ought to be a second-class citizen or anybody ought to be hanging from a tree.
You know, Greg, by the way, you've heard said pearls before swine, and I'm sure the letters of outrage are already on their way to Radio America for your audacity in calling Congressman Carson swine. You know, I think one of the you know, this is a bad martini, but I think what's really bad about this martini is just how ubiquitous it's gotten, how common it's gotten. It is not surprising to see some rather vociferous members of the Congressional Black Caucus really casually accuse those who think differently than them and those who disagree with them of racial animosity. And at some points, I think, you know, we saw the Daily Show routine joking that the race card has been overdrawn. That you know, maybe we've just reached the point where these, you know, flow off like water off a duck's back. Now I'm in trouble because I probably compared members of the Congressional Black Caucus to ducks. there is no acceptable metaphor anymore, apparently. We've just gotten, I hope, immune to it, but we really shouldn't be immune to it because, you know, racial hatred is a terrible thing, and you'd like to think that if there was genuine racial hatred, and when we see genuine racial hatred, that we would vociferously stand up against it. In light of this, there's no particular sense, a grasp of what, I guess it's just they're conservatives, and Carson automatically equates belief in limited government with ipso facto support for murder. And once that is the starting point for debate, once that is how Carson begins, boy, when are you going to get him to, you know, co-sponsor a veterans bill or some relatively, you know, non-controversial piece of, like, you know, renaming a post office or something? I mean, once you've basically said people who disagree with me are racist and murderers, you know, you can't do anything. So I don't know whether I should chalk this up to gerrymandering and the fact that members of Congress are in districts where they could make statements that are constantly cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And now I've called them cuckoo, and I'm sure someone else will find great outrage in that statement. That there is no thing you can say that would put your seat at risk. But this is just the way our politics is, that every couple of weeks, or sometimes even more often than that, we get some ludicrous bit of overwrought rhetoric, and there never seems to be much of a consequence for it. But in the meantime, the country has to spend 2 months debating whether Sarah Palin's map included bullseyes or surveying symbols.
And basically what we're seeing here is a lot of people who like big government, and so they're trying to make the case that anytime you want to reduce government or at least balance the budget, shock, shock, then all of a sudden you hate poor people and black people and anybody else who relies on the government instead of trying to improve the system to make it more efficient and to make sure that there actually is aid there down the road before we go completely bankrupt. So this is just another, obviously, a scare tactic that they're trying to trot out there. But like you mentioned, it's completely overused, and hopefully all but the very warped are not buying any bit of it. So on to martini number three now, and this led off the morning jolt today, Jim. This is just rich. Mitt Romney is apparently having a little bit of trouble raising money from Jewish donors on the conservative side, and the problem is not that he's a Mormon. The problem is that all these Jewish donors, or at least a lot of them, are convinced that Michelle Bachmann is Jewish based on her last name, and apparently they have not listened to anything she has said in the last however many years she's been in Congress, 4 years, 5 years, whatever it is. Because if they had, they'd be pretty clear about the fact that she's a Christian. Not really sure why this is a problem, but it's pretty stinking funny.
Yeah, I would put myself as a category of increasingly skeptical of this story. For starters, not a single person is you know, quoted by name in that story. Two, to believe that it's true, we have to believe that there are wealthy Jewish Republican donors, which they exist, but they're not terribly common, that two, that they'll donate for someone simply on the basis of being Jewish, which I suppose could happen. I'm a little bit, you know, skeptical. But then also somehow that it's so important for them to support a Jewish Republican presidential candidate that they will cut a check immediately without actually checking into whether the person is Jewish. You know, Bachmann could be a plausibly Jewish name, but somehow that all of the coverage of Michelle Bachmann's Christian beliefs has completely escaped the attention of these donors. Somehow they've not bothered to look into her, to know anything about her views, her background, her beliefs or anything. They just know, oh, Jewish sounding name, I'm going to write a check. And so I'm love to see who these wealthy donors who you know, write checks very easily and who don't believe in any due diligence whatsoever. Greg, I'd really like to find these people and ask them for grants, because it sounds like the kind of donors I'd like to have.
That's right. No questions asked. That's the type of donation you want. And it could be just could be that Mitt Romney's fundraising efforts are drying up a little bit, given that a couple other people have joined the race recently.
But, say, do you catch a whiff of excuse making on this? You know, Romney comes in and says, you know, what's going on? This is, you know, way less than I expected. Look, boss, what are we supposed to do? Everybody thinks Bachman's Jewish. My first reaction was I picture Romney saying, oi. But you know what? You know, the clean cut, ordinary guy, Mitt Romney, maybe this is what makes him come out and, you know, say BS. You know, if I'm Romney, I really don't know if I'd accept that excuse from my fundraising team of, you know, the name of an opponent is blocking all the donations we thought we'd be getting.
Yeah, that does not pass the smell test. Maybe he'll finally take the gloves off here and mix it up a little bit. We'll see in this debate. Sponsored by MSNBC next week, which I'm sure will be very fair and ask no ridiculous questions to the candidate.
Oh, can't wait, Greg.
Jim, have a great day. Good luck with your internet. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.